We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
Talking about them fucking dogs. That's what I told them.
Hope it didn't take that long again. Go dogs.
We're back. That's right. It's 100 Sanford, baby. We are back in the house. This week, it is me and Graham again. George is still coming back from vacation, but me and GC are going to hold it down. What's up, Graham?
Man, just, you know, still out here in North Carolina trying to make the studio setup work mobile. I think we got it going. But
Yeah, man.
Recording on the fly.
You sound good as usual, man. You know, the voice is crystal clear. Everything.
I
guess, see, you know,
the
background
looks tonight, full function. So. Yeah, you know. Yeah. My mother's interior decorating.
Nice, nice. Well, I tell you what, man, before we go any further, you know, things are heating up. We are midway through the season. It is bye week. But with that being said, we want to make sure you subscribe to the show. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the like button. You know what? Push the podcast out to as many people as you can. We appreciate everything that you do for us. Also, head on over to IG, TikTok, and the X. Follow and repost. And we only, you know, can appreciate that. Last but not least, become a member of the collaboration for the nation. That's right, Dog Central. Everything wrapped up into one site with numerous dog hosts, our opinions, and your favorite fan interaction. And Graham, you want to drop some knowledge on these people? What's going to be happening down in Athens in a couple weeks?
Yeah, so Friday, November 3rd, which is the night before the homecoming game against Missouri, Dog Central and Home Field Apparel will be having an event at the Foundry downtown Athens. It's, you know, Foundry is now a hotel. Graduate hotels, they have hotels on college campuses all over the country, and one of those is downtown Athens at the Foundry. So we'll be doing from 5 o'clock to 10 o'clock Friday night. They'll be running a pop-up shop. If you are a UGA student or you have a student ID for any school, you can get 50% off any home field items that you want that evening. And from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., we'll be doing a live panel. Alex Kirshner from Split Zone Duo, which is an excellent college football podcast, he will come in and be hosting it. I'll be there. Big G, George Foster, will be there. And Jim Wood from I Got a Podcast, and John Smith, who is on, you know, the Dog Central YouTube channel and pod feeds a lot. You probably know him on Twitter as John Tweet Sports. So we'll be doing a little UGA adjacent panel. There's some rumors of some special guests that are much more special than I am that may show their faces as well. So come on down, check it out. And it's a totally free event. You can RSVP on graduatehotels.com. Go to the UGA graduate hotel website, and you can also go ahead and sign up now, because if you want to be there for the live panel, make sure you go ahead and save your seat, because there is a limited amount of capacity for that building.
Nice, man. I mean, I'm actually jealous. I was on my way.
Trying to get you down.
I was on my way, and the weather has disrupted a lot of things for me.
Mm.
One thing I don't do,
uh-huh,
I don't miss the kids' events. I don't miss either one of my boys' events.
I get
never
it.
Miss That's... it. And but I'm also coaching, so it'd be uh-huh different if I wasn't coaching. It would be different if they weren't like going to be playing for the championship. But my son's game has been moved back because of rain and the weather we had earlier to right that weekend, along with him starting travel basketball. So that same weekend. So he's a little That's bit disappointed, tough. Actually. Yeah, man. It's very tough.
I was hoping that you were going to be down there with your boys, because my nephew, I think, is coming to town. And he's about the same age. And so going to put those guys
together. We're going to line them up. We're going to hit. Put the
pads on. No. They were going to I was thinking quarterback receiver type action, you know. My nephew's got a big arm, man, for a for a 7-year-old. Yeah. But yeah, they're both, you know, he's all up in the flag football scene right now, which I know your youngster is as well. So some other time.
Yeah, man, it's a big thing right now, the flag football season. I'm also trying to get my nephew Jacob to play, man. He's the same age. I'm trying to get him, you know, he can be a running back, linebacker, be anything you want to be. Just make sure you come out and play, Jacob. That's all I'm saying. Just play with us.
There you go.
But, hey, man, you were in town. Did you happen to see that game? Did you happen to see Georgia? Georgia and Vanderbilt. That's what we got to talk about.
Well, of course. I was not at the game, but I did see the game. Yes.
Yes. But we have to break that down, man. What are your thoughts on Georgia Vanderbilt? Off the top, I thought it was very vanilla on offense and defense, to tell you, you know, to be honest with you. But what are your early thoughts on that game?
I think vanilla is the correct word, right? Like, what do we know? And I mean, you know, I think one of the things that we try to do on this podcast, one of the things that I try to do at Dog Central is, you know, help people understand what they're watching, right? And what you were watching on Saturday in Georgia Vanderbilt was like a textbook Kirby Smart, you know, long con special is what I call it in 12 takeaways. Like, Georgia dominated that game and every conceivable facet except for turnover margin. Over 300 more yards than Vandy. They had the ball for the vast majority of the game. Yards per play, over a 2.0 net yard per play advantage. And they ran like 40 more plays than Vanderbilt did. Everything in that game would cook up for like a 50-6 or a 70-0 type of score.
Yeah.
But Georgia in games like that, they like to use people get upset, especially like people that are going to hate listen to this from other fan bases. They'll get upset when they hear this, but Georgia uses SEC games as practice. They do. not all of them, but
oh man, it's about to go viral.
Well, they do, man. Like, Georgia had been not very good at running inside zone throughout the season so far this year. What did they do on Saturday? They ran inside zone concepts right at Vanderbilt over and over and over, straight up the middle. Nothing fancy, just like, boom, we're gonna hit you. I believe it was 16 times that they ran inside zone in that game, and they did it for – let's see here. Inside zone. Inside zone and inside slam. Like, that's what they ran. 16 times they ran inside zone read for 206 yards on 16 attempts. And then they ran inside slam 12 times. And those attempts averaged 16.4 yards a carry. Like, this was a get-right game for the middle of Georgia's offensive line and for their zone rushing attack. And we saw at Auburn, right, they struggled to run zone. They finally got some stuff going on the ground in the late third quarter, running gap scheme outside the tackles. And then against Kentucky, they came out and they sort of continued doing that with that outside running attack. In this game, they finally, I think, you know, for the first time this year, even against like some of the other lesser teams that they played early in the schedule, they really have not run inside the tackles well. So this was a chance to do that. And then you got in the red zone, and Bobo did what Todd Monken did a lot of times over the last couple of years, which was not burn his red zone plays onto tape against a team that he didn't need to do it against. 2022 Kentucky game comes to mind, that 16-6 game, where Georgia, I think, like, really struggled in the red zone. This was the same type of story, and Georgia really didn't struggle that bad in the red zone, but, like, they never punted in this game. And on Twitter afterwards, I had people in my mentions saying the offensive coordinator, you know, needs to be fired. Oh, like, that's absurd, man. Yeah, exactly. It's absurd. And I thought from my perspective, in terms of like what you want to see from Georgia to become more complete as an offense, they check those boxes with the inside run game. Against Kentucky, it was all outside receivers. Carson Beck had, I think, like 16 or 14 attempts outside the numbers in that game. Mm-hmm. This week, it was let's get Lovett and McConkey involved. Let's work our inside receivers, which obviously they're going to need once we get to, you know, talking about the loss of Brock Bowers. So, other than the injuries, I thought they did everything that you wanted to see them do to indicate that their ceiling is very high as a football team and that they are going to reach it before the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at what they did against Vanderbilt, Dejon Edwards, I mean, that's the first name that comes to mind. You start talking about running in between the tackles and running up the middle. 20 carries, 146 yards. But what I loved about his game this past game against Vanderbilt was his ability to be able to not only hit the hole, but get to the next level, make a guy miss. You know what I mean? That was special from him. You could tell he is coming back off that injury. His leg is feeling better. His knee's feeling much better. And that actually creates a lot of balance to this offense, man. You know, especially, you know, we're going to get to one of the bigger injuries that happened during this game. But there's going to be a lot of people that have to touch the ball moving forward. And when you have a more balanced offensive attack, which they are now starting to prove and now starting to show, it means a lot. And for all those people that were under, you know, on your Twitter DMs or anything else talking about the offensive coordinator, are you crazy? I mean, like, really, let's just be real about this. When a team does not have to punt the ball once, that's insanity to think that the offensive coordinator has an issue. There was no issue. It was a very vanilla offense, very vanilla defense. Everything that they did was to impose their will on Vanderbilt and to see, okay, you know what, we're just going to line up and just play football, backyard football, and see what happens. Stay healthy as much as we can, develop some things that we have to develop, mix and match some offensive line pieces, defensive line pieces, and see what happens. And when it came down to it in that game, Georgia actually showed, you know, obviously who the better team is. No doubt about it. But at the very same time, they actually showed that if they have to grind it out, they can grind it out. They can do a lot of different things. Carson Beck looked, you know, great as usual, minus the one interception that he threw. But he was well in control of the game. I mean, again, that's a game he's going to throw for 400 yards if they really want him to throw for 400 yards, right? Right. And then I love – you know, I love the aspect of the receivers. You know what I mean? Using those receiver different combos of receivers, a lot of guys touching the ball. It was awesome to see. But obviously we had the big thing happen. And I think that's what everybody's more concerned about moving forward. You know, it was a 37-20 win, but then the unicorn goes down.
Right.
That's the big thing that happened moving forward. And the question is, what does Georgia now do with this offense with Brock Bowers going down? What are your thoughts, your immediate thoughts? Actually, you know what? I want to show you something else first. This is what Mark Richt had to say. You know, when it comes down to as a head coach and what he tells his team. I think the players understood it really. I mean, they know how good these guys are. They know how valuable they are to the team. They know what kind of catalyst they are for everybody. And everybody knows they got to step up their game. Everybody knows the margin for error is just a little bit less. That was Coach Mark Richt on Dog Nation. And he's right. He's 100% right. Everybody's got to step up their game. But you know what? There's a lot of guys that have been waiting to get their turn. A lot of guys that have been waiting to step into the shoes of a Brock Bowers to make their mark. And I think this is where we're going to really see if this team has what it takes when they're really tested and their back is up against the wall. But what are your thoughts with Brock Bowers going down, man?
My thought is that I like what Coach Richt said about, you know, the margin for error being a little bit less, because I think that's accurate. Like, Brock was kind of the thing that's behind the glass, you know, in an office building where it says like break glass in case of emergency. Yeah. Like at Auburn, you know, Georgia broke the glass in the case of an emergency and when they were tied in the fourth quarter of a SEC road game. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, carried them in that final drive and throughout a lot of that fourth quarter. I think that he's an integral part of the offense. He is, and you know, I think like what his value has been to Georgia's offense is that he makes hard yards look easy, or he turns like short passes into long yards. And there's a lot of times this year where, you know, he's had games where he's averaged 9-10 yards after the catch per reception. You know, that UAB game, I think it was, where he went off and had like 130, 150 yards receiving. He only had one reception or even one target that was like past the line of scrimmage. It was just like, okay, we're going to motion Brock pre-snap. We're going to do an RPO fake, and then we're going to flip it out to him over there on the boundary, and the wide receivers are going to block, and he's going to make somebody miss. Or even if they don't block and he doesn't make anybody miss, he's a baby rhino and he's just going to like carry a bunch of dudes for 5 yards. And then we'll be in second and two and we can run whatever we want from there. You lose that. And that's an important thing to lose. Like, I don't want to diminish that at all, but what my personal opinion on it is that if Georgia as a football team, as we go through the month of November and they face these tests in Jacksonville and back home against Missouri and Ole Miss and the trip to Knoxville and even Georgia Tech and Atlanta, like if Georgia was relying on force feeding Brock Bowers to win those games, then this Georgia team wasn't going to go where they want to go anyways.
Agreed.
He's a very important player and his importance is often not really, I think, noticed by the casual like fan, because there's a lot of plays that other guys get to make because the defense is giving Brock attention. And so you're going to have more contested catches. You're going to have guys that, you know, are able to split a corner and a safety with their speed. Like, guys are going to have to do things that they haven't been being asked to do. But Mike Bobo has shown every week, especially in the big games, that like he knows how to scheme guys open. And at times that's been Brock Bowers that he's scheming open, but we really saw the offense run through the boundary receivers and the running backs to start the Kentucky game. And then Brock got his in the third and fourth quarter. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's a bad injury and it sucks and all of that. But like, I don't think it changes the expectations for Georgia. Vegas is probably going to factor that into their lines about a point and a half, you know.
Right.
This isn't a touchdown a game type of injury, even if it feels that way for a lot of people right now.
But you know what's funny though? You just mentioned something. It's not that type of impact in terms of the points. But when you look at what Mike Bobo was doing, if you go back and look at Oscar Delp's catches, they were similar plays that Brock Bowers would be running. The only difference is that they're going to be, you know, the defense is going to be keyed in on Brock Bowers. I mean, it's with Delp being wide open, Brock Bowers is going to have two guys on him, but he's still making that catch. You know what I mean? So in a way, it almost opens up the offense a little bit more and spaces out the offense for a lot of guys to make some impactful plays. By no means, though, am I saying that Oscar Delp, that Lucky, or Brock Bowers. By no means am I saying that. I mean, we're talking about a once-in-a-lifetime, generational type tight end that's playing for Georgia right now that's down. But one thing that you have to trust is that this team has recruited well. This team is poised to be able to handle a lot of injuries. That's why you recruit well. That's why you continue to bring in four-star after five-star after four-star after five-star to make sure you have enough depth in case things happen. In a lot of cases, when you kind of look at this injury, although it does suck, and I mean, you mentioned that it sucks, right? But we're talking 4 to 5 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, and we're talking about an injury that In a lot of cases, he can come back, you know, around that 4-week period. Just depends on how well he's healing up. But you have the bye week that kind of gets you away from it. You have the Florida game, which you kind of think that you're going to go in and kind of handle. You got to get past Missouri, and then you start reeling it back around Ole Miss and Tennessee. This team is good enough to win those games without a Brock Bowers, but I'm like you. You made a very perfect statement, Graham. If the offense was going to be built solely around Brock Bowers to begin with, going down this stretch, this back nine, so to speak, they weren't going to win all those games doing so. It's impossible. You cannot build your offense around one guy in the SEC and think that you're just going to, you know, impose your will on that team. The run game has to be moving. The pass game has to be, you know, spread out a little bit more. And those things are now starting to come around, right? You have Bronson Robinson, who's supposed to be coming back off of injury, and he's going to be inserted into the lineup coming around soon. So
wait.
Am I dreaming? Did I hear that somewhere that Bronson Robinson was coming back?
No. He's got a blown out patella. He's out for the year.
No, who else? There's somebody that's coming back, man.
Roderick Robinson.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My bad.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Robinsons, good. Man. Mr. Robinson's neighbor.
I know.
Yeah. So, I mean, we got, you know, backs getting back healthy, and that helps, right? Because you got Kendall Melton, who's been banged up, and every other game, he seems to have something that kind of jumps up and bites him a little bit. But when you have balance, you are able to compete. And one thing I loved about this past game, they were able to show more balance, and they're going to have to do so moving forward without Brock Bowers. And it's something that you kind of look forward to. I mean, you're going to have to have life without Brock Bowers going, you know, next year anyway. You might as well see it now and see what this team is able to do with Carson Beck fully being the, you know, the starter and everything resting on and riding on his shoulders, so to speak. It's going to be interesting to see where this team goes moving forward.
It is. And I think for Georgia, you know, in a way, this might make them more dangerous. I think it makes them less predictable for sure.
Yes, definitely.
The drawback, obviously, is like you don't have that safety valve that we were talking about earlier. You also, in Oscar Delp, and like, look, you know, Oscar Delp has had a really nice stretch of games here lately. So what I'm about to say, I don't say lightly, but there were numerous people that I speak to who watch practice every single day that felt in the spring like Lawson Lucky might be Georgia's second best tight end this year.
And, yeah, you know, I've heard that.
Felt like he came in and as a blocker, you know, was further along than any of the freshmen they've seen since Darnell on the tight end position. Mm-hmm. And then they felt like that, you know, his route running was already probably the cleanest in the room. And that includes Brock, who is a mutant, but, you know, that he's not a guy that runs like super, super crisp and precise routes. Doesn't matter, obviously. It hasn't hurt him, right? But point being, I think Lawson, in my mind, was always sort of like, man, there might be a game where they like slip him out there as an inline tight end in a heavy formation and the opponents are going to think he's coming into run block and then he's going to leak out on some wheel route and he's going to run past everybody for a touchdown and that's going to be this big play or he's going to go off in the second half of some playoff game when they need sort of something that no one's expecting. You don't have that luxury anymore with him or Oscar. Like, mm-hmm. You got to use those guys now. They got to get involved. But the idea that Georgia is about to, like, abandon 12 personnel, I wouldn't be so sure of that. The offense has been built around two tight end sets. They were running two tight end sets with John Fitzpatrick, you know, who was a nice player and a really good blocker, but he was not as good as Delp, Brock, Lucky, or, you know, maybe even Sperlin, especially from a pass catching standpoint. Like, I don't know, does the 6'7" freshman tight end slip in there and catch a ball up off the crossbar of the goalpost in the red zone in the SEC championship game at some point. Like, there's guys in there, and I think that truthfully, you're going to see them find a lot of space in the middle of the field maybe now, because teams are just going to double down on trying to stop other players. And Bobo deserves the benefit of the doubt on this one. Like, we've seen him call some games where he gets into a really nice rhythm of, you know, getting different guys the ball and getting those guys the ball in different parts of the field. So it would be wrong to say that I'm not, like, worried about Georgia, because I definitely think that, you know, for Beck, Bowers became the security blanket of sorts. But yeah, I think that this might bring about, like, final form Georgia in a way where you see them really working those boundary receivers. You know, you see Carson throwing more of those 50-50 balls that he hasn't really had to throw at this point because there's guys mm-hmm. open other places. And I think you might, you know, have all of that happen in some narratives around wide receiver recruiting and still have Brock Bowers for the college football playoff and SEC championship.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're not the only person that's talked about Lawson Lucky. I mean, we had DP on, David Pollock, on a few weeks back, and he was excited about Lawson Lucky getting an opportunity to step onto this field. You know, we talk about the loss of Darnell Washington, and they believe that he's like that elite style blocking tight end, right? When we start talking about that 12 personnel, we don't see him a lot, because a lot of times what they do is when they have that 12 personnel and they do have, you know, it's Brock on the field, it's always been Oscar Delp on the field at the same time, right? Now you're going to see maybe Delp and Lucky. So it actually adds a different element to your offense. It adds a different element that we have not seen since last year with Darnell Washington and maybe the unicorn out there at the same time. But I'm like you. I think that it adds a different element to this entire offense that we have not seen all year. When everything is kind of going through, and even as a fan, right, you're watching the game and you're saying, okay, oh boy, we're in a tough stretch. What's going to happen? Third down, we got to get the ball to Brock. We don't have that luxury anymore. Carson Beck doesn't have that luxury anymore. Now it's really spreading that ball around, making sure, like you said, those 50-50 balls with guys, and I believe they can go up and get it. You got Rosemary Jack Saint, who can go up and get that ball, right? You got bigger receivers. He can catch anything, right? Ra-Ra Thomas. I mean, he's – that dude, when you moss someone and you get the autographed gloves, I mean, that's telling you something, that you have a special receiver in your yeah. locker room. And I've been waiting for him to touch the field all season to really be a key focal point of this offense. And he's that type of elite receiver that can be that focal point. So I think we're going to see a lot of different things, along with utilization of the run game with Dejon Edwards, like I said, playing well, playing much better, healthy. Dylan Bell, I think we get this, a chance to see a different style of Dylan Bell, you know, really mm-hmm. being able to utilize his skill set, which is able to, you know, his ability to be a running back, to be that slot receiver, to be that X, that Z, whatever he needs to be for this offense, he's able to be. It's going to be interesting going down the stretch, but I think what we really have to focus in on over the next couple weeks, it has to be that defense, man. It has to be that defensive line, because that was vanilla also. Oops, sorry, folks. That was vanilla also on the defensive side of the ball. But I still need to see pressure from that front four. I need to see some attacking from that front four. And I think they've been vanilla on purpose, man, because they do realize that this stretch, this back nine, so to speak, starting with Florida next week, or after the bye week, is going to be the toughest stretch of the season. And hopefully this defensive line can really start putting some pressure on the quarterback, because without putting a lot of pressure on the quarterback as it is, they're causing a lot of turnovers. The secondary's been playing lights out. I mean, Tykee Smith with another interception. I mean, there should have been two or three more interceptions in that game, quite honestly, against Vanderbilt. But that front four, man, they got to put more pressure on them. What are your thoughts as we head into this bye week? What do you want to see? What do you want to see developed as we move forward?
What I would like to see developed for Georgia as they move forward would be, you know, it's The only unit I really have concern about, which is, this is going to blow my mind that I'm about to say this out loud about a Georgia football team after the last 2 years, but the only concern I really have at the moment is the defensive line. And
yeah, that's it.
You know, it's not really about the run game. Like, I think they're doing a very good job in the run game and sometimes a great job in the run game. But, like, there's just not any disruption happening, man. Not with the starting front four. When they're rushing four, they're not getting pressure. They're not even, like, moving guys off their spot. You know what I mean?
Bro, like, they're getting stood up. Let's just be honest. Yeah. They're getting stood up a lot of times.
Like, you know, Nazir Stackhouse, who had a phenomenal season for Georgia last year, like, really helped carry that that D tackle room when they were without Jalen Carter for a stretch. Like, Stackhouse has, let's see here, one this year in 100 pass rush snaps. That's not going to cut it, is it? Zion Logue, let's see what he's done this year. One moment. Here we go. Four pressures in 94 pass rush snaps. A little better. Again, not going to get it done. Like, that D-tackle position is so important in modern football because, A, it's the shortest distance between a defender and the quarterback is where those guys line up. B, you know, if you can come up there and create pressure, you take so much of the field away from the quarterback in terms of where he can throw the ball, where he can see openings, you know, it, and then you also flush him into your edge rushers. So they got to find somebody that's willing to, not willing to, but that it's able to create pressure from those inside spots on the defensive line. We've seen Kristen Miller do it. We have seen Warren Brinson do it. I think Jordan Hall can do it. And we're starting to see more of those guys. I just think, like, when Georgia goes to Florida next week, last week was informative to me because they started again with that same front four of Chambliss. Chambliss, I think, Logue, Stackhouse, Walter was the four. And that first drive, you saw, you know, Vanderbilt fly down the field for a touchdown. Now, they weren't the ones that busted the coverage in the back end, to be fair, but, like, Vanderbilt had, I think, you know, it had this, the long pass play, but the other two pass plays it completed before that were some of the longest pass plays it had in the entire game. Like, those guys weren't being disruptive. And then Georgia put a whole different four out there the next drive, and even coming off a turnover, it was three and out and a missed field goal. So, I think that they've got the picture and that they're starting to do some different things. But, you know,
look up Christian Miller's stats. Look up Christian Miller's stats.
They're not as good as you'd think.
Yeah, they may not be as good as
three pressures on 67 pass rush snaps. His run defense has been exceptional.
Yes. Yes. But I'll take that.
His run defense has been better than the other guys as well.
Right. I will take the run defense being exceptional. I will take even the presence, even the thought of you being a disruptive pass rusher. I mean, that gets into the mind of the quarterback. But when a guy's able to sit back in the pocket and he feels comfortable, against a good quarterback, he's going to light you up. Because there's no fear of getting hit. There's no fear of having to escape the pocket and get tracked down by, you know, a guy that's 6'5", 300 pounds and runs a 4.6. There's no pressure. And I think that, again, you go down this back end, this back nine, man, there's some guys that can sling it. There's some guys that can really rip it. And a game that comes to mind is Missouri. That game absolutely terrifies me right now. I know people are like, oh, you must be crazy. Just go watch Missouri on tape. Watch how well they're throwing that ball and moving that ball up and down the field. And if you don't get a lot of pressure on these guys, they will pick you apart. They shouldn't have lost that game against
LSU.
They lose? LSU, yeah, they should have lost that game, but their defense is bad, right? But offensively, they are outstanding. They've been outstanding offensively throughout the year. So, but I'm like you. I need to see more out of that pass rush. And again, it doesn't have to equal 3 to 4 sacks a game, but it has to equal some pressures, allowing that quarterback to get off his square, to not feel comfortable in the pocket, because we're not seeing it. I mean, I went back and I watched tape and I watched play after play after play.
Oh, no, it's not there.
It's not there.
Yeah.
You don't see it.
You said it well. I mean, they are getting stood up. It's not like, oh, these guys are – they're shooting gaps, but teams are rolling the pocket against them or, yeah. You know, like, no, like teams are just blocking with 5 and Georgia's rushing 4 and they're not – they're not even walking defenders towards the quarterback in a lot of cases. Right. And so, yeah, I mean, like you go from there and you go out. Mykel Williams looked like Mykel Williams to me on Saturday. And what I mean by that is like he looked explosive and disruptive in a way that he often did in 2022 and maybe hasn't been quite so much coming off of that foot injury. So far in 2023, I think he's getting back to himself. So I'm not advocating for taking him, you know, out of the lineup in any way. But yeah, I mean, I hate to, you know, I feel like I always end up talking about Chaz Chambliss. And so like, I imagine that like the Chambliss family, like is using like my face as a dartboard or something in their household. And I don't dislike Chaz. Like, in a lot of ways, I think he gets more out of his talent than most guys in college football and most guys on the team. You know, like he's the type of player that like good programs are made out of, you know? And I think that there's things that he does really well situationally. And there's times where he does everything well, man. There's times where he plays a run and you're like, shit, that was textbook, man. Like, he just, you know, set the edge there and then came out and made the tackle. And, you know, he's stringing plays out. Like, all of that happens. And, you know, I mean, he had sack in the SEC championship game last year, sack against Kentucky and Florida, I think, last year. We have not seen him get as much pressure, it feels like, this year. And to me, I feel like the argument for playing him is like, well, there's some downside at times in the run game, but on passing downs, you know, you feel good about his chances of winning. And I don't feel like he's won enough to justify the drawbacks of having him on the field against the run. 6 pressures in 78 pass rush snaps. Like Josh Hancher, aka Dog Stats, he pointed out on Dog Central, I believe Sunday, we were having some discussion in there, and some folks were talking about the PFF grades, which, don't get me wrong, man, PFF grades are flawed. They are not the end-all be-all by any means.
Right.
But they, if you look over large sample sets, they do have some value, and there are some indicators. Like, when you go back and look at, like, what was the PFF grade for – you know, Devontae Wyatt and Jordan Davis when they were freshmen and sophomores and not playing as much. It's like, here they are grading out over 80, you know, every time they touch the field. Like, there's good indicators in there. In 4 SEC games, there's only been 2 game grades from Georgia defensive linemen that were 70+, and both of those were Warren Brinson. One of those was against South Carolina, which was a 70.1, and then he was a 79.9 against Vanderbilt. But, like, you think about that. I mean, I was used to – when I started doing 12 takeaways, was the 2021 season, I would get on there every week, and Georgia's defensive grades would just be, like, you know, all these, like, big blue and green numbers, you know, for the most part. And – it was all the, you know, it was all the defensive linemen in there, including the backups, right?
Yeah.
And I just think that, like, without that alpha dog on the D line that teams have to focus on and put attention on and double team, it's gotten harder for everybody else. And they haven't really adjusted to that so far.
It makes you wonder who the alpha dog is. That's amazing to me because, you know, you go back to the 20 season, 21, 22. I mean, we're talking about legendary styles of defense, right? Right. I know people can go back and talk about the Miami days and things like that. And those teams were great. Don't get me wrong. But they were also playing in the ACC. I'm talking when you're dominating the SEC the way you've dominated the last few years with Georgia and winning national back-to-back national championships, we're talking about a defense that was outstanding. Got all these guys were going to the NFL. But you look at now and you're saying to yourself, who is the alpha dog on that defense? I mean, you don't have it. I mean, at least to my knowledge, I haven't heard anyone step up and say anything about it. I haven't heard. I mean, you would hear names. Nolan Smith is that guy. You know, you would hear this guy's that guy. You don't hear that. And right. I think if there's anything that's missing, in this secret sauce of 23 and going for, you know, a third national championship in a row, it is that alpha dog on that defensive side of the ball that can really dig into someone's arse and get them moving. And I think that they – right now they're really playing a little bit entitled because there's no reason in the world, I don't care who you are, that you should be going into the into these games for the first six, seven games and you're getting stood up. There, I mean, there's no – You're basically just going off your own regular talent and nothing extra. You're not giving that extra. That concerns me. You know, I had a quick question.
Yeah.
No, I was wondering, you know, what's Jalen Walker's stats? You have his stats over there? Because I think he should be getting a little bit more playing time as well, bro.
I mean, the issue it seems like with Walker is he an inside linebacker or is he an outside linebacker?
Yeah.
And I mean, like, there was a series at the end of the Kentucky game, and I had, like, been sitting kind of up a little higher, and I came down towards the field to see some friends, and it was three plays in a row, and it was like, dude, he, you know, made a great tackle against the run on first down, had a tackle for loss against the screen on second down from inside linebacker, and then on third down he comes off the edge for, like, a pressure – and he hits the
I know the exact run. Series you're talking about, man.
Yeah, and it was like, where has this dude been all my life, you know? Jalen's got eight pressures in 63 pass rush snaps, which is – I mean, that's very solid. That's a solid win rate, especially from the edge. Yeah. You know, you see – one thing I would say if anybody's listening to this and they go in and look at these stats themselves, like – you'll see Mondin and Dumas Johnson, like, they have insane pressure rates, but that's because, like, when they pressure, they're the fifth and sixth guy. You know, like, they are the blitzer, and they're getting to come free, and they're often getting to come on a delay unblocked. So, you know, a little bit different standard for them than you have for the guys that are lining up with their hand in the dirt. I think with Walker – the Kentucky game, for example, he had three pressures on nine pass rush snaps. He's just not playing that much, to be truthful with you, man. Like, he played 16 snaps against South Carolina and had two pressures on 15 pass rush ops, which wasn't great by, I think, what they want out of him. And then, you know, at Auburn – he only played 10 snaps. Like, he's not playing a ton right now, but I think that could change following the bye week. Like, that's the thing that I've been told for a couple weeks now, really, man, going back to the week before the Kentucky game, is that we're going to see some young guys play more after the bye week, that they're going to kind of use Vanderbilt in the bye week to give some older guys one more shot to establish themselves. And then at the end of the day, like, you're playing some of these older guys because you trust them to not bust things. But if they're busting things anyways, and then they're not as, let's just be honest, they're not as, like, talented as some of the younger guys that you might be able to put out there, not quite as athletic in certain instances, then it's sort of like the conversation earlier with Chambliss. It's like if you can't get them to do the one thing that you're putting them out there to do, then why are you putting up with all the other issues, you know?
I hear you. And that might be one of the things that they need. You know, somebody has to get benched. Somebody has to, you know, sometimes there has to be a lesson that's learned. And that kind of, you know, like lights a fire underneath everybody to say, hey, you know what? We just can't be resting off of 21 and 22. This is our season. And I brought up entitlement for a reason. I mean, sometimes you can become entitled, and it doesn't seem like it's happened necessarily on the offensive side of the ball because you have some guys that are looking to prove themselves. You have a Carson Beck looking to prove himself. You have the running backs, the wide receivers. I mean, those divas always want the ball, right? So they're going to go out there, they're going to bust their arse to try to, you know, to make things happen. But on that defensive side of the ball, man, that's a test of will when it comes down to it with those big guys up front. And either you want it or you don't. And, you know, maybe this is what's going to happen over the bye week. And I'm actually looking forward to some of these young guys getting an opportunity because I think this last class that we've seen in 23, this freshman class, along with 24, can be something that is a sight to behold, quite honestly. But we'll see. I mean, that's why you play the game.
It is. And, I mean, I think, you know, it's not, I think, like totally always about, I don't know that they're playing with entitlement in my mind. I see it more as like they're playing to defend something that wasn't really theirs to begin with in a lot of cases.
Ooh.
Instead of like playing with this, like playing from a place of hunger, like they look like too well fed in a lot of ways. And they don't look desperate at times. They don't look quite as hungry. And yes, like they were a part of those last two teams, but mm-hmm. that winning streak is not something they should be going out and playing under the burden of, you know, like they should be going out and playing under the kind of thought pattern of, hey, I want to go and show the world what I can do because I want to be a multimillionaire who's drafted in the NFL like the guys that came before me, right? Like, it's not about what Georgia has done for the last 2+ years. It is about, like, you and your own personal journey and you getting the most out of your time at this football program. And
but you can do that, though,
your staff. I know they can. I'm not saying –
Because when I look at like, okay, this is the best example I can give you. When you go back to those Miami days when they were dominant, they had to live underneath the burden of playing behind guys like Ed Reed and all the rest of these guys that were just churning out. I mean, the U was churning out champion after champion and, you know, first Ron round Taylor. Picks. Right. And these guys took it to heart, like saying, you know what, I got to be the next guy. I want to be the next guy, and I can't let those guys that came before me, can't let those guys down.
Well, I don't know. Can they get Nolan to come in on the bye week and chew some ass? You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe.
I don't know. They need somebody.
But my point is, I mean, look, man, you're talking about – this is why nobody's ever done this before. Like, it's tough. The truth. And, I mean, I just think that you're dealing with a team that I do think has come together from like a trust standpoint. Yeah. Like that Auburn game, I think brought this team together the way the Missouri game brought the 2022 team together.
True.
But, you know, the Kentucky performance was a step in the right direction. Let's be clear. Like that, you know, the pass rush was not great, but like, the rest of the defense played pretty well for the most part. I don't know. I'm very interested to see what Florida's like because Kirby has a history of saving bullets for Florida. Like, he treats that game like it's as important as it really is. You know, treat that game like it's just any other game, then you're kind of falling into the trap. And Kirby, even if Florida's bad, he still points to that game and is like, you know, hey, we're not going to rush to have this guy back by Vanderbilt. We're going to make sure we get him back for Florida. You know what I mean? Like, there's there's always kind of Florida's always sort of pointed to, and part of that's just because it's after the bye week, but I think that they've been sort of building towards something, and we're going to find out what that is, good or bad, in Jacksonville, right? Like, I do think there's a chance that that defensive line comes out. They're due to have a day, and at some point they're going to have that day, and sometimes that's all you need is that one good day, and then you get that momentum, and you start rolling. You know, I mean, I was told all through the summer this was the toughest fall camp that Georgia ever went through, like under Kirby Smart. What you think about that? Even when he was coming in early and building his culture, like, he worked these guys harder than he's ever worked any team, and it's because of those entitlement things that we were just talking about. But I also think it's because he knew the type of schedule that he was going to start the season with. There's a lot more guys on this team that have been dealing with injuries than a lot of people realize.
Yeah.
You never know, man. Maybe they come off the bye week and they're healthy and they're, you know, let loose a little bit. And we, you know, we do see Jordan Hall, instead of playing, you know, five or eight snaps, he's out there getting 20 to 25 snaps a game, and 12 to 15 of those are pass rush snaps, and he's swallowing Graham Mertz up, shooting through the A-gap. Like, those are all within the realm of possibility, but what I can tell you is that there's nobody that's probably more disturbed by this than Kirby is. It'll get figured out. Like,
if I'd say Trey Scott. Say Trey Scott's probably disturbed.
Well, of course, but
yeah,
like, yeah. Georgia. The thing about this man is that Georgia. Sorry, I know we're about to wrap up here, but the last thing I'll say is, remember what the narratives were about college football coming into the 2021 season. It was, you cannot win a national title unless you have elite level quarterback play. Like, you have to have, you know, a Burrow or a Jones. You've got to have somebody that is basically, you know, going to quarterback you to having one of the best offensive seasons in the history of the sport, or something on par with it. And Georgia came in with nasty lines of scrimmage, and they blew that shit to smithereens. Yeah. Like, that is the recipe, is Georgia came in and reminded the whole world, like, your spread offense is cute, but the sport is still played from the inside out, and your spread offense doesn't work so well if your quarterback can't sit back there all day and wait for these deep in-breaking and out-breaking routes to develop. That's still the formula. That's still the recipe. And no, there is not a Jalen Carter on this team. There's probably not even a Devontae Wyatt on this team, but that's how this whole thing was built. And I think that you're going to see some things come full circle, because the offensive line, we were having all these same discussions about the offensive line a few weeks ago, and they have
starting gotten around in
their
the
shit straight, and they've done it despite being down, you know, two starting tackles so far. Like, I think it's coming. I just don't know who it's going to be that's kind of the one that brings the pain for them. But somebody's going to go off in Jacksonville.
Well, I mean, we could talk about that next week. We have the bye week this week. We get a chance to kind of look at some film, break some more things down. Hope, you know, we hear a lot of good news in terms of injuries and guys coming back a little bit more healthy, not getting banged up in practice. Mm-hmm. But we can talk about that next week. We'll have a great show next week.
I can't wait to talk about it with next week.
Yeah, man. I'm almost ready to take off the entire week and just sit around and vegetate and watch film, and then watch some of his film as well, and then just make myself happy for the next weekend or so. I can't wait.
Tape.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. But hey, man, what are you going to be watching this weekend, man, before we get up out of here? I mean, no dogs.
Buddy. Well, I mean, it's Bama, Tennessee, and it's Ohio State, Penn State. Those are kind of the two, like, marquee matchups, as they say. But, I'm interested to see those games. I'm also kind of interested. I'll have an eye on some other spots. I feel like you know, UCF at Oklahoma could be an interesting football game. I want to see South Carolina, Mizzou. I want to see Duke at Florida State, Utah, USC. That's all going to be fun stuff.
Yeah, man. I mean, I brought up Mizzou. I'd tell anybody to go watch those guys play. I mean, it's a home game for them. Very fun. I mean, Burton is insane, and they place him all over the field. It's similar to like Brock Bowers. He is their Brock Bowers. You know, what I mean, he opens up so much for them. It's insane. But I'm looking forward to that Ohio State Penn State game.
What? Give me your predictions for Ohio State, Penn State, and Tennessee, Bama.
Ooh, wow.
I'm sorry.
It's at Ohio State. No, it's okay. It's at Ohio State. You know what? I still got to go with the Buckeyes in the horseshoe, man. When you start looking at that, I mean, it's a big game. Franklin does not play, you know, he doesn't coach well in big, big games. He doesn't have that great record. And I think they're another year away from Drew really having full command of that offense and being able to do what he wants to do. But I don't think they have the horses that can really keep up with Ohio State in the shoes. So I'm going to go Ohio State. It's a tight one. It's tighter than usual, though. 27-20 Ohio State in the shoe. I think the spread is 4.5. Yeah.
That sounds about right, doesn't it? Yeah, but I'm with you on your logic. I think that for all of the hype about Penn State and this being their year and all of that, I think that is kind of a product of just to be honest, it's a little bit of a soft schedule that they've had to this point.
Yeah.
You'll look at Drew Allar, he's not stretching the field and he's not competing passes deep. So unless they're saving it, which maybe they could be, I don't know if this is the week that starts happening all of a sudden. And if it is, then hats off to Franklin for the long con, taking a page out of Kirby's book. I respect it. But I think it's going to be, you know, all of that hype and then the usual Nittany Lion letdown. I'm going to say I think it is low scoring. I think it's like going to be like a 24-20 kind of game. I think it'll be close, but Penn State will have a final drive that sputters out at like the 30-yard line. Tennessee-Bama, who you got?
Tennessee-Bama. Oh, man. I've been going against Bama all year long. Mm-hmm. And 9-point spread. Jeez,
that's a big spread.
That's too big for me. I'm still going to go Bama. They've just been tougher. They've been tougher than Tennessee all year long. I mean, for all that we talked about Bama becoming soft, they've actually started to get a little bit of that grind back. And I think it's because of the quarterback play they've had to. So I'm going to actually go Bama. They're not covering that spread, though, man. I'm going to say, again, low scoring, maybe 26-20, Bama.
I like that. Okay. 26-20, man. That's
the under
score for some people. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know, bro.
That was the score of the 2018 National Championship game, my friend.
Yes.
So the thing that scares me for Alabama is like they got off to a hot start last week and then they couldn't score. And that was against Arkansas, who was giving up points to everybody. So I got a weird feeling, man, that I actually think that Tennessee this year is built to kind of stay in this game. They've run the ball well this year.
Right.
I think that, like, their defense actually might be able to give Bama some problems. Because I think Bama's passing game, it runs through Nye Black, the tight end, and it runs through Burton on the outside. And that's about it right now, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I think that Tennessee can kind of scuttle the run. I'm not saying they'll shut it down entirely, but I think they'll limit it. And then – I don't know. I just got a weird feeling about that one. I definitely have taken Tennessee plus 8.5, but I am going to say Tennessee 28, Alabama 24, and people are talking about the people are going to be talking about Nick Saban's career and how much time it has left come Monday morning. That will be an overreaction, in my opinion. But I think Josh Heupel I just think Tennessee might be set up to have weird fluky shit happen when they play the Crimson Tide, and then maybe they don't get that luck against Georgia. We'll see.
Wow. Well, yeah, man, you're really out there. You're really out there. A lot of people want you out there by yourself too. hey, bro.
I think it's good for Georgia if Tennessee wins that game.
Yeah, man, it's good for college football. It's good for the resume. It's good for the SEC East. For as many people have talked about maybe the SEC being down. I don't think SEC's down. I think college football as a whole is kind of just quirky this year.
I think it's a great season, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's talent all over, a lot of good games that have been on TV. I mean, I hate to talk about it, but, you know, Coach Prime has been out there, and I think he's brought a lot more visibility to college football as a whole because you've had to watch quite a few more games because of teams that have actually played them as well. But it's been an interesting season. But hey, man, let's get ready to get up out of here. It's a short but sweet show. Next week we can't wait to see you folks. But right now we are out, and as always – go Dawgs. Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dawgs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.